You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
All right. Hi, I'm Manish Arapara. I am the CEO of Peak Activity, a digital transformation and e-commerce company located in sunny South Florida.
Manish, thanks so much for finding time to join us today on the Ivy Podcast. A little bit of a background for our listeners. It's, you know, I want to say 99% of our guests that we host on the podcast come from referrals and recommendations from either good friends or our network or the people that I host or other hosts that we have. And, you know, there are a couple of friends of mine, you know, when we were talking about who would they recommend, almost immediately, two of them, they said, you got to talk to Manish. And I was like, who is this guy? I definitely got to reach out. I definitely got to talk to him because obviously, you know, whatever you do, you did it right. Because these are, you know, great guys. They represent big companies. So I was pretty excited to reach out to you and get an opportunity to spend a few minutes talking to you.
Great to be here. It's always wonderful to have other people refer you and happy to spend some time with you here today.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, Manish, tell us a little bit more about Peak Activity. What problem are you guys solving with your products and services, and how it all come about for you to either, you know, build this company and get involved? And a little background story would be great.
My background is I spent a number of years both on the technology and the marketing side of e-commerce at a large company here in town called Office Depot. And having built up the solid background in international and technology and growth and scale and understanding how you can take an e-commerce business from point A to point B. When I started this company, I wanted to bring that to the masses, right? So it's one thing to be a Fortune 500 company and have the resources to scale and grow a business. It's another thing to be a midsize or even a small business that's looking to really achieve growth. And in the days of Amazon and some of the big giants that are out there, you too can be successful as a small business or mid-sized business. And so what we've done is really built a phenomenal organization around helping businesses scale in their e-commerce and their digital marketing and in their technology needs, and really focus on what's innovative, right? Our job is to innovate, and you can't always do it internally, and we're that partner to help really you be the hero as somebody who's trying to scale your business. And we're the guys who help make that happen, bring the expertise, the talent, and the technology to bear.
Okay, that's very interesting. So you really focus on kind of the private entrepreneur, smaller company sector to help them expand into building e-commerce capabilities? Or is it a combination of solutions where if I'm an entrepreneur and I want to, you know, build an e-commerce business, is that something that you guys engage with and provide your technology for that?
We do, yeah. So it is really a combination of things. It's long gone are the days where there's one solution that fits everyone. And you really need to pick and choose and customize and really understand your customer. And so that's where we like to start is once we understand your customer and your business, what are the right ingredients that need to go into play to help you be that unique voice, right? Because everyone's got something that is differentiating for themselves. And you can't just be in a competitive herd and doing the same exact thing as your competition. So our job is to help you stand out. Our job is to help you navigate the waters and not get eaten by the sharks is what we try to do.
Right. So as far as you differentiating yourself from, you know, the whales of the e-commerce, the Amazons of the world, the Walmarts, what's the kind of one unique value proposition that makes you successful in your space and as far as the value that you bring to some of your clients?
It really comes down to expertise, right? And going through and having learned the lessons along the way, having failed many times, having done some things that we probably would like want to take back, right? And I'm a big believer that you learn from failure as much as anything else. What we can do is we help our clients on their journeys not make those mistakes, right? And by bringing that big picture, and saying, well, this is what's going on in the industry. This is what's going on in other companies like yours, so that you don't have to make costly mistakes and you can move faster, right? So if you win, think about, you know, playing cards. If you win 4, 5, 6 hands in a row at poker, guess what? You're on a hot streak, and everyone wants to be on a hot streak. And it's not necessarily luck, right? But it's the preparation, it's the skill that goes into it that gets you on that hot streak. So our job is to bring that preparation. And of course, it does always take a little bit of luck. But more often than not, if you have the right skills, if you have the right team, if you have the right capabilities, you're going to win over time.
Right. As they say, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite quotes. I love that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. Manish, as far as some of the latest trends or the latest developments in when it comes to e-commerce or the different ideas that you may be super excited about, tell us a little bit more about what are you currently researching? What are you looking to invest in further in your space? What's next for e-commerce?
There's obviously a lot going on in e-commerce right now with what's going on with the pandemic. E-commerce is white hot, and what's going to happen over the next few years is you're going to see a lot more of what you see in retail, right? You're going to see personalized experiences. You're going to see loyalty programs that are expanded into e-commerce. But what really matters is how can I speak one-to-one with my customer? Things like AI or big data or augmented reality to help my customer really understand what's in it for them. So if I'm selling widgets, instead of just selling widgets on a big shelf at a big box store, I'm selling the right widget for you. And if you're trying to do a job of, let's say, a construction job, and you're trying to take down a wall, well, you need a sledgehammer, right? I'm not just going to sell you a regular old hammer. So by knowing what you're interested in, by knowing what you're trying to do, what you like, what you dislike, by bringing that data in and applying some intelligence to it, we really think that it's going to become a world where the marketing is going to be personalized to you, the sites are going to be personalized to you. And I think you see that today. If you and I both go to some websites today, let's just take Amazon, for example, we're going to get different experiences. Mm-hmm. And everyone should have that. Whether you're a $50 million company or a $100 million company or $1 billion company, you should be able to have that personal experience. And you know, if you're shopping for wine and you like French Reds, well, you should see French Reds all the time, and don't show me the Chardonnays from California. So that's where it's going. And you see terms like AI thrown out there, automation, robotic process automation. Those are the words are out there for a reason, which is those are the trends that will be here to stay. And it's early, but we're on the journey to those.
Very interesting. And funny you bring that up, because for us at ProSource, we've partnered a lot with a lot of companies from different industries, and we focus on very niche IT skill set, and whether they are looking for, you know, a cloud engineer or a site reliability engineer, or a lot of the skill set lately that we've been getting a lot of requests is around advanced technologies, such as, you know, the RPA, machine learning, AI, in that space. And as I spend a lot of time talking to a lot of executives who want to get on that journey, go through these digital transformation initiatives or adopting some of these advanced technologies within their operations and, you know, company-wide, as far as, you know, jumping on that bandwagon or following the trends is one thing, but when it comes to the actual implementation or leveraging such technologies or even methodologies is a completely different story. I want to get your take on, as far as what are some of your recommendations or some of the, you know, maybe case studies that you had observed through some of your clients as far as leveraging AI, machine learning, or RPA, and what are your recommendations as far as for these companies to take advantage of those?
We're huge believers in two things. One is to have a strategy, right? It's you can't stick your head in the sand and wait for others to do it. But in order to have a strategy, you have to learn it. You have to understand what AI really is. You have to understand what blockchain really is. And I'm not talking about deep PhD level understanding, but if you're the CIO, CTO of a company, you should have a good grasp on what these things are, right? And a lot of them are headlines in a newspaper, right? If you think about AI, really AI is one of those terms. It's very encompassing, right? You got automation, you got machine learning, you got different really tactical tools that come into it. The second thing I really think is important, once you understand it, is a test and learn strategy. It is no longer appropriate to go out on a 2-year journey to say, we're going to be the best at AI 2 years from now. Well, test your way into it. Like, figure out what your measurements are going to be. Figure out what your smallest possible, you know, dipping your toe in the water is going to be. And once you've done that, get the right resources, try something out, get feedback, move on to something bigger and better, right? And the more you learn, and the more, quite frankly, going back to the more you fail, the better you're going to understand what it is that you're trying to do and what it's going to mean to your customers. So once you get a grasp on the technology, what you're trying to do strategically, go out and try it. But don't do it on a multi-year scale, right? Try it on a 5-week scale or 4-week scale and get your feet wet.
No, I love that advice, and that resonates with a lot of other executives that I, you know, discuss this particular topic. It's all boils down to, you know, whether that's experimentation or iterating and going through, you know, smaller cycles. But at the same time, like you said at the very beginning, have a grand vision, have a strategy towards, you know, where you want to be, and then executing on a smaller scale to deliver these particular, whether the features, you know, services and so forth. From like shorter sprint perspective, I think that gives you an opportunity to evaluate the impact to your customers, the impact to your operations, ROI, and so forth. So that's very exciting. Thanks for sharing that. We briefly touched upon kind of the innovation and different trends in the industry. One of the topics that I'm very passionate about is building and fostering a culture of innovation at organization level. And I spend a lot of time researching that topic. And I recently hosted a webinar, executive roundtable, with two CTOs, CTO of IBM and CTO of SAIC, on that particular topic. And they've covered a lot of very, you know, interesting and creative ways how they build and foster culture of innovation. Want to get your perspective on you being at the head of your organization. What are some of the initiatives or strategic, strategies in place basically that allow you to not only build but foster that culture of innovation? Because I would imagine, especially in e-commerce, it's constant evolution, it's constant change, and you have to be, you know, ahead of the curve almost to continuously innovate. So how do you do that?
It's really simple, and it's really hard. The simplicity in innovation is you should have very small teams and you should empower them. Teams of two, teams of three, maybe even one, and give them your measurements of what you want. Give them a direction and let them go invent something. Let them have some runway and go about doing something. What you don't want to do is bring the machine, right? Don't bring your project management office in. Don't bring your complete product teams and all that, because once you do that, you stifle the innovation. You don't have the vanguards that are out there looking for things at the edge. However, once you have stumbled upon something innovative, the transition between the innovative team, and sometimes it's a matter of letting go, like the creator of the patent isn't the implementer of the patent. They don't take it to scale, and innovation not done at scale is not tremendously value adding, right? So if you think about how do I invent something, lots of people invent great things, right? How many people have had ideas for Facebook, right? But there's only one Facebook, and they brought it to scale. They got billions of people on board. They didn't just have a great ecosystem for connecting with friends. That's been done before. So that kernel that you plant with small, really smart people, let them invent something, then you transition to the larger organization. So in, culturally, how do you embrace that? How do you keep small teams moving and then larger team kind of implementing these ideas? It goes down to some of your organizational structure, and it goes down to some of the freedom, right? So within our company, we have an innovation co-working hour on Mondays, where we'll have usually the leader of our emerging tech practice on with anybody who wants to show up, and they riff on different ideas. And if there's an idea that seems like it's got some potential, you've got some freedom to go and spend some time and get a team of two or three if you want and go explore it. Once that idea is matured, then we're going to bring it back into the company and analyze the data and say, oh, look, this is something we really want to invest in. And then we'll go through the CapEx cycles or anything else as far as investment goes and move it to scale, right? So by that freedom, that no matter how large or how small your company is, whether you're a solo entrepreneur and just kind of tinkering with things, or whether you're a large company like IBM or SAIC, you should have that ability for somebody to create and invent new things. And if you don't, that's when you're on your way to stasis. And quite frankly, that's where I think Amazon has done a phenomenal job, right? You think about drones or even Prime, those were just tests that a couple of people were tinkering around with, tried them out. And then once they became something that looked like it was viable, Amazon brought it into their machine and then put their muscle behind it.
Right. No, I love that what you're talking about. And one of my favorite books is during my time at Harvard, one of my professors, he's the author of the book, Experimentation Matters and Experimentation Works. And in these books, he covers a lot of case studies on successful and not successful organizations actually embracing that whole concept of experimentation, which is exactly what you're talking about, and being able to embark on these prototype projects where you actually make an investment that you allow your provide that autonomy to your team members, to your employees, to explore an idea and then take that a little bit further to actually, you know, build that, prototype that, see the impact, and then bring it to the organization at the grand scale as far as the implementation. I've seen, you know, a lot of very successful and not successful case studies where that actually worked and failed. But most of the time it's, you know, if you create that environment where people feel empowered to not only bring the idea to the table, but know that their idea will be heard, I think that's what separates, you know, kind of the winners from the other pack.
Absolutely. And I think one more thing to add to that is it's not tech industry specific.
Right.
My son has a very rare eye disease called Coats disease. And there's a drug called Avastin that was intended to treat something completely separate, but that drug saved his life. And the way that drug was invented follows a very similar pattern, right? Which is, you know, one guy had a dream and he wanted to bring this drug to market. And it probably tried, they did, you know, the big drug companies probably tried to kill it. And then they said this would fail and this would never had a market, but he persisted. And I think, you know, by never quitting, by never taking failure in the first or second round and overcoming it is super important. But it doesn't matter what industry you're in, right? I know there's a lot of people out here that might be in other industries, right? Whether you're in manufacturing or in retail or anything else, the same pattern applies, right? It's not just a high tech thing or an information tech thing at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm glad that you mentioned that because it's, you know, usually the context is around technology, you know, software development, but at the end of the day, that's applicable to, you know, to any industry, to any field. I actually, right before our conversation, I spent some time with one of the executives at the Westgate Resorts up here in Orlando, timeshare. And it was pretty exciting to hear some of the kind of innovation strategies they have to evolve from a timeshare organization to this kind of this industry disrupting kind of this hotel themed experience for families. I thought that was pretty immaculate as far as, and that's a great example of what you're talking about, not just being applicable to technology per se.
Absolutely. Any industry, if you're not innovating, you're dying, right? So keep trying to innovate and create that culture. If you can, by any means necessary, make that culture, because we've all seen the brands, right? The Woolworths of the world, the Sears of the world, that just really, they didn't create that culture of innovation and they're not here for the long run because of that.
Right. Absolutely. So that leads me to kind of the next topic I want to talk to you about is building the culture of innovation and, you know, the fostering that. Obviously you need to surround yourself with the right type of people that would fit that type of, you know, environment, that type of culture. As we partner with a lot of our clients, we spend a lot of time analyzing and, you know, and almost experiencing their culture so that we, as we embark on a journey finding that right candidate, we're able to relay and find that almost perfect match, in terms of the personality, the technical skill set, and the ambitions, in partnership with what actually the company is all about and what their leadership is all about. From your standpoint, what are some of the strategies that have helped you in the past or recently to attract the top talent? How do you go about finding very niche, something that's, you know, a skill set that is, you know, is a unicorn?
Well, I quite honestly, I do employ a test and learn strategy here as well, right? You go through the interview process and you find some really smart people who are very capable, but you may not necessarily have exactly the right home from them for them. And some people are better as innovators. Some people are better as team members. Some people are better as lone wolves. It's really about finding that sort of right fit for them once you've found the unicorn, so to speak, right? And I'm fortunate in that I've got a lot of unicorns on my team, and they help, right? They help take the burden off, and I think once you've got a couple of unicorns, they attract other unicorns, right? It's like flies and honey. So there's no magic. I think, you know, making sure that you're not trying to find the perfect fit necessarily, but finding the right fit culturally. Always hire for culture. Make sure that they're going to fit well within the team. And I'm a big believer in embracing diversity, right? Not everybody is going to be the unicorn. If all the unicorns are lone wolves, and you're not going to have a great team, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, it takes a great team to put out great products and deliver great service. So you do need to find the diversity across the team. You can't just find the greatest machine learning developer or the greatest cloud engineer and not have them be able to work within a team. So a lot of it has to do with the culture that you create intentionally and hiring for the diversity across the board. And one of my favorite things is, you know, my favorite adage is you can't change people. You don't try to change people, right? So if you do find somebody who is a phenomenal technologist, but is, you know, a little socially introverted and wants to just go in their closet and code, well, find an extrovert that is, you know, more managerial and nurturing and does one-on-ones and encourages people, and let them complement each other. So don't try to change that great engineer into something that they don't necessarily need to be, because playing to people's strengths is super critical in that regard.
Which makes me think of one of my favorite books and favorite quotes by Ben Horowitz, the author of The Hard Thing About the Hard Things. And one of the things that he talks a lot about is hiring for strength versus hiring for lack of weakness, which I observe that a lot through, you know, not only our clients, but in the industry in general, where some of our candidates go through the interviews and it almost feels like the interviewer is focusing more on the lack of weaknesses that the candidate has and how well am I going to get along with that particular candidate versus what is the strength that we're missing on our team? What is it that we need? And focusing more on that, I think that it's a big disconnect. And unfortunately, not a lot of kind of the teams and executives really, really focus on that. But that's exciting to hear that it's something that you recognize as a leader of your organization that, you know, like you said, you can't change or fix personality. And it's really just first recognizing what is the missing strength on our team and focusing on that. And the rest becomes supplementary. I think that's a recipe for success.
Absolutely agree. 100%.
So you being, you know, an executive at the top of your company, somebody goes through multiple rounds of interviews, they get vetted through, you know, technical screening and whatnot, different assessments, multiple rounds of interviews, candidate gets to Manish. Give us a glimpse into an interview with the CEO. What does that look like? Do you get creative with your interviews? Do you keep them pretty traditional? And more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you talk to the candidates?
I wouldn't say anybody says I'm a hard interview. I want to get to know that person and what makes them tick. So for me, it's all about the personality. It's all about the cultural fit. It's about how, as much for me, if they are part of the team, how is this person going to be a part of the team? Are they going to be, you know, type A and out there, you know, making task lists and knocking them off? Are they going to be everybody's friend and you know, that extrovert that's going to happy hour every week. And you know, I really want to understand what their motivation is. And that's the biggest part of it for me, is that really just understanding the personality fit, understanding the cultural fit, understanding how they're going to potentially interact with the other coworkers. And at the end of the day, we're all human. We're all here. We spend a lot of time together. You don't want to be in a toxic environment. The last thing you want to do is create a culture that just doesn't fit together. So you might have the greatest strength in the world, but if it's not the fit for the team, then it's not going to work out. The other piece I'm really really passionate about is understanding that you can learn from failure and understanding that you have gone through trials, tribulations, and that you're able to be resilient and overcome them and not make the same mistake twice. So I'm a passionate believer in you know, if you come in and you know, you check all the boxes and everything's perfect, well, you haven't learned enough, right? So yeah, you haven't been knocked off your pedestal and you haven't been challenged enough. So I want the veterans who have some scars, or I want the up and comers who, you know, you might be interviewing as an intern. I want to know that you didn't just get a 4.0 GPA and sail through school. I want to know that there was that one teacher that graded you super hard and knocked you down and gave you a B, and here's how you bounce back. Yeah, so it is really important that, you know, the more you go through life, the more you learn, and sort of the less wisdom you have over time, because there's so much more to be gathered. And I want people to know, if you don't have a constant curiosity, a constant desire to learn, constant desire to improve, well, that this isn't the right place for you. So it is important to always be improving. And that is one of the key areas that I focus on as well.
Right. No, I love that. I love it, because it's a lot of different thoughts come to my mind as you were giving those examples. Is one of the reasons why I started Ivy Podcast is specifically for that, is, you know, being very entrepreneurial myself through having started other companies and then worked in the corporate world and now back to kind of the private sector, working at a very small startup. I was always fascinated with, you know, hearing other people's failures and what did they go through? What did they learn? And also being able to persevere through that process and actually use that as an opportunity to learn and turn that around into something really cool, something, you know, like a different idea that led to building a different company. I always found that to be, you know, very exciting. And that was kind of one of the reasons why I said, you know, podcasts was a great opportunity for me to connect with, you know, like-minded people and hear their stories, hear their, you know, some of the things where they failed. And what you're talking about as far as translating that to kind of the interview almost format, when you talk to a potential candidate and to be able to understand each other, at least at a high level, because it's a short conversation, to get a perspective into their thought process and what's important for them. I think that's, you know, that's definitely a unique opportunity. From your standpoint, you know, more specifically around e-commerce, what are the most in-demand skill sets that, you know, the reason I asked that question is a good portion of our listeners on Avi Podcast are, you know, they're executives themselves. And then the other half is early stage career professionals. And a lot of questions that we get on the podcast is, hey, what is the next big thing? What is the, you know, what are the different skill sets that the companies are looking for? What should I invest in as far as, you know, my personal, you know, growth? If you were to point out a couple of skill sets, they don't necessarily have to be in technical domain, but for anyone that's looking to get into either e-commerce or that particular industry, what would you say, kind of, what would that be?
I think there's really two skill sets that come to mind, about three, but software development's not going anywhere. So if you've got the ability to write great code, absolutely, that's a discipline that's here to stay, and it's not going anywhere. There's two that I think are really emerging, and they reflect sort of the importance of what's going on and the shift from just getting something done, which oftentimes you have software developers that will write a piece of code and it'll meet the acceptance criteria and they'll ship it. But in order to really see measure what your impact is and see your product come to life, there's two skill sets that I really believe people should think about. One is product management, and really, really good product management is one of the hardest things to find. It's one of the hardest things to teach. You've got to really have empathy for your customer. You have to understand when somebody is coming to your website. Who are they? What are they trying to do? And how do you make their life so dead simple that they're just going to click, 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 tap, 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 and stay with you forever, right? And build that brand loyalty. A good product manager is able to kind of create and cut through the noise and build something. And I think you saw this in the old days where shopping carts were super clumsy and terribly difficult, and you had to whip out your credit card, and then all of a sudden, you got like one-click carts, you got Apple Pay, you got really easy, streamlined checkout process. That's good product management at use. And then the second one that really goes along with that is analytics. If you understand how the numbers work, that is, it's liquid gold, right? I mean, it is a way for companies that are looking to grow. They usually try to just pump more dollars into marketing. Well, if you don't have a basis in analytics, if you don't understand what your return on ad spend is, or what your conversion rate is on your website, if you don't understand what your average order value is and how do you increase it, you're not gonna make the progress. You're just gonna spend more and more and more, and not see the same level of return. So by having a great analytics team, and what that does is let you optimize. So if you see that people are coming to your website and getting stuck on a product page, and they're sitting there and they're not clicking add to cart, well, your analytics is going to tell you that. And then your product manager is going to go along and say, well, why is that? Oh, well, look, we buried the add to cart button underneath 7 pages of text. So they work hand in hand. But if you don't have the data, if you're not measuring correctly, the rest doesn't matter, right? You can have the greatest software engineers in the world, but if the product managers aren't telling them how to build something, and what the acceptance criteria are, and the analytics isn't giving the product management the insight as to what the customers are actually doing, you're failing, and you're really failing the engineers that you spend a lot of money on, spend a lot of time recruiting, because they're not really performing optimally, even if they write the most beautiful code. So those are the two roles that I'd start with, John.
No, absolutely. I love those recommendations, because you know, we live and breathe that on a daily basis as we help other companies find that particular talent. And, you know, you nailed it on the head from product management perspective. That's my background, project and product management. That's where I grew up professionally. And, you know, I always stress the importance of that, because those are the mini CEOs within your organization that run the particular, their own almost mini companies with their mm-hmm. own ROI, their own CapEx, and, you know, their own set of customers. And how, you know, that trade, that field is only going to grow, and that skill set is going to be even more in demand. And then from analytics standpoint, kind of what you've said, you can invest, you can have the best resources in the world, but without really understanding the impact, the understanding where the actual investment is going to and how that translates to some of the value that you bring to your customers, I think that's, you know, goes unspoken. So I love those recommendations.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in with a real quick example. Mm-hmm. I mean, we launched a new e-commerce site for one of our customers, and it was a long journey. And when we got there, about 2-3 weeks later, the CEO was in with us, and all we did was we showed him that we got a 2-second improvement on page load speed, right? And what did that translate to? That translated to millions of dollars a year, and in 30 seconds, we were able to prove our worth and show how much of a difference that improving the page speed made. Without an analytics resource, even crunching those numbers, it would have been, oh my gosh, I spent years of development on expensive software developers, and I don't quite see the return. So just by having that analytics mindset, it cuts through and translates to business speak, which, like, we're all in this for dollars and cents in one way or another, right? And that's magical once you have that skill set.
Absolutely. I love that example, because me and my CEO, we spent, hours and hours strategizing around this, because we're building this technology, this analytics module almost, for us to be able to mine the data, use the data, how to understand, where's our longest processes, where's our weaknesses, and how does that translate to, us delivering greater value and, better, faster, in a leaner way. It's, all boils down to be able to analyze how you're operating at the, an operational level. I love those examples. Manish, you and I can spend hours and hours probably talking about this, but I know you're a very busy guy. So last question, what curious, I ask everybody, what is What are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
So the book I'm currently reading, it's probably my fourth time on it, is it's called Measure What Matters. It's by a guy named John Doerr. He was at Intel. He helped Google put the system in. He's a famous venture capitalist out in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley. And it's a system built around objectives and key results. And I'm a big believer in, you know, if you can set the objectives right for a company or for a team and then measure, obviously, as you've heard on this podcast, that you're going to be in a much better position of success, right? And if you think about leading and leadership, it is about helping set those objectives. My favorite book is called Loon Shots. It's by a guy named Safi Bakal. And it is actually about innovation and how the dynamic between small teams and the machine, the larger teams, works and how to actually create that culture of innovation, how to create that sort of methodology and understand scientifically sort of the what goes into innovation. And so I highly recommend Loon Shots. It talks about really what the Department of Defense did in inventing radar right during World War II. And so all kinds of examples that go back throughout history. And so if you're anybody in leadership, you should understand how to innovate. It is your job to understand how to do it and then how to create the culture and how to create the teams and empower those individuals to do it.
Oh, those are great recommendations, especially the first one. You said this is your fourth time reading it?
It is. We're actually putting that system in place. We're putting objectives and key results in. So I seem to always go back and reread for the reason of, I want to make sure we're doing it right and I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. So it's definitely something that, you know, I don't normally read books multiple times, but it is definitely something that I'm going back and making sure that as we go through this process as an organization, we're doing the right things. And you know, you always learn from others, right? Just going back to your statement, if I miss an example or if I go back and look at how could I have done something differently, that's where I am now.
Right. No, I love these recommendations. I was taking notes as you were speaking. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles of the books available in episode notes. Manish, Ken, thank you enough for this very short and impactful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. I'm looking forward to staying in touch with you, and we really appreciate your time today.
I had a wonderful time, and I'll take you up on talking about this stuff for hours at some point in the future. So thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.